Our TV critic David Bean Cooley says it hasn't taken long in the new year for television to get off on the right foot. This week he's adding two more shows to his 2012 viewing list. Tonight there's the premiere of Alcatraz, the Fox drama that's the newest series from J.J. Abrams, whose previous shows include Alias, Lost, and Fringe. And tomorrow brings the season premiere of one of TV's best series of 2011, the FX drama Justified. Here's David's review.
Let's begin with Justified, because frankly, that's the one that's got me the most excited. This is a series that ended its previous season about as brilliantly as you can end one. With Timothy Oliphant as Deputy U.S. Marshal Raylan Givens and Margot Martindale as backwoods drug kingpin matriarch Mags Bennett sitting down for a drink of homemade moonshine. I won't say what happened next, but as a piece of TV drama, it was absolutely, unforgettably, deliriously perfect. So now, on Tuesday, comes Season 3. Perhaps after Margot Martindale won a Supporting Actress Emmy last year for her season-long role as Mags, Graham Yost and the rest of the production team at Justified had a hard time imagining a single actor who could come in and command attention the way she did. At any rate, what they've done instead is load the deck with one great actor after another, like a relay race, with another familiar, exciting face showing up every week. I'm not kidding. I've seen the first episodes of this new season of Justified, and the ratio is more than one great guest star per week. In the opener, there's Neil McDonough from Boomtown and Band of Brothers as a Detroit gangster moving to Harlan County to expand his empire. In episode 2, there's Carla Gugino, who starred in TV's Karen Sisko, another series based on stories by Elmore Leonard. And in episode 3, there's Pruitt Taylor Vince from The Walking Dead as Glenn Fogel, a local thug who operates out of a pawn shop. Here's a scene from that third episode in which Raylan, played by Timothy Oliphant, enters the pawn shop in search of another bad guy, but finds Fogel instead.
What you got in the back there?
Oh, the back room, that's not for customers.
Customer Deputy U.S. Marshal Raylan Givens.
So this Wade...
Wade Messer.
Messer, he's a fugitive?
He is.
Well, you got a warrant there, Marshal?
It's just a nice friendly visit.
Afraid without a warrant, this is friendly as I get.
Funny, because I came here because I'm looking for my buddy Wade, but the way you're acting makes me think maybe the person I'm actually looking for is you. In fact, it just occurs to me, if I was running a scam, shipping stolen goods out of town, a pawn shop would be the perfect place to hide the swag in plain sight.
Tell you, if I ever break bad, I will keep that in mind.
See you around, Glenn Fogel.
See how much fun they're having there? That break bad is a sly wink to Breaking Bad, one of the best shows on television. And Jerry Burns, who plays Jesse's ineffectual group therapist on that series, is in this season of Justified as well. It's like a convention of great actors from great TV shows. The roster of regular and guest stars this season includes alumni from Deadwood, The Shield, Dexter, Lost, The Walking Dead, and 24. And this season already is serving up an ending that's as tense and as clever as last season's showdown with Mags. And it comes at the end of a regular episode, proving, almost boasting, that Justified, when shooting to entertain its audience, has ammo to spare. The writing, the acting, the directing... Everything on Justified its place on my 2011 top 10 list. At the end of 2012, I already suspect it'll be there again. A show that premieres tonight, though, I'm not yet sure about. It's Alcatraz, the new Fox series from J.J. Abrams of Lost and Alias fame. And its first episode is very mysterious, very intriguing, and could go just about anywhere. It's one of those shows that will take at least one more episode to ascertain how good and how coherent it really is. It wants to be another Lost, and employs multiple timelines and hard-to-read characters while setting up its novel premise. It's set at Alcatraz, both in the present day and back in the 1960s, when the infamous island prison was emptied and closed down. Except, in this story, that's not what may have happened at all. And eventually, an expert on the history of Alcatraz is pulled into a police investigation to connect the present with the past. While trying to solve one mystery, he stumbles upon another. The key weapon here is that the expert in question is played by Jorge Garcia, arguably the most universally loved character from Lost. He played Hurley. And here, his character is a lot smarter, but he's just as casually charming, as he tries to figure out what's going on around him. Here, he's talking to a dedicated San Francisco police officer played by Sarah Jones, and enlisting her in what soon becomes his investigation.
You're the expert. What do you think happened?
I don't know. But last time on the island, I stumbled across a room that was full of files and boxes and all sorts of stuff I wasn't supposed to see.
Pier 33, first boat out.
I'll bring the coffee.
In its premiere, Alcatraz leads us down lots of hidden passages, some literal, others figurative. The less said about them, the better, because the enjoyment here is in the way this particular TV tale unravels. The problem is, it's hardly begun to unravel by the end of episode one, so I really, really need to see more. But I love the premise, the setting, and the co-stars, who include old pros Robert Forster and Sam Neill. Oh, and the last time I really, really wanted to see more of a J.J. Abrams series before committing to it fully, that was with the premiere of Lost, which, starting with episode two, hooked me for good. So while I may not be completely hooked by Alcatraz at this point, I'm definitely on the line. And I hope the show, in the coming weeks, reels me in.
David Bean Cooley is founder and editor of the website TV Worth Watching and teaches TV and film history at Rowan University in New Jersey. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Fred Snyder. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Melody Kramer is our associate producer of online media. Roberta Shorrock directs the show. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies.
The television version of the movie Napoleon Dynamite premiered last night as a cartoon. Another new TV show based on a movie is The Firm. Critic Eric Deggan says the two new offerings are part of an enduring and not necessarily proud TV tradition.
Remember when Jennifer Aniston wound up playing Ferris Bueller's sister in a sitcom? Or when Cornelius from the Planet of the Apes met Carol Burnett? Television has a long history of trying to make classic films work as a series, including what might be the most successful film-to-TV transplant of all time, CBS's MASH. So with that success in the rear view, it's easy to see why NBC wanted to turn another movie into a TV series, The Firm. In this version, earnest lawyer Mitch McDear, played by Tom Cruise on the big screen and Josh Lucas here, sent a major mobster to prison and now wants to leave witness protection.
It's been 10 years, Lewis. Denver, Scottsdale, Wichita. My family wants his name back.
I don't know. If it was me, the guy who sent my dad to prison for life, he'd be right at the top of my list.
The Firm commits what I consider a cardinal sin of ripping off, adapting movies to the small screen. It makes carbon copies of the film's characters, from Lucas's perpetually in motion lawyer to Juliette Lewis recreating Holly Hunter's sex kitten of a receptionist. My preferred film adaptations treat the movie like a guideline. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Nikita, Friday Night Lights, and my current favorite, NBC's Parenthood. Peter Krause's Adam Braverman is a version of the high-strung husband and father Steve Martin played in the 1989 film. But Krause's Braverman is less brittle, less funny, and a bit deeper. When a drunk employee kisses him after a party, he tells his wife about it, causing the biggest crisis their marriage has seen yet.
She kissed me, okay? I stopped the kiss. I came home.
Adam, tell me the truth. Are you attracted to her?
No, I am not attracted to her.
TV loves movie adaptations for one reason. Successful films offer established brands audiences already know. But it also seems the best adaptations get away from their film roots as soon as possible. That makes it tough to judge the latest movie to make the transition, 2004's oddball film about Idaho's most awkward teenager, Napoleon Dynamite.
Grandma, will you buy me this tiny rolled-up horoscope?
Stop asking her to buy you stuff. Whoa, Grandma, will you buy me this lighter that's shaped like dice and says High Roller?
The movie is a tribute to teen tedium so quirky it already played like a cartoon. So Fox made it into an animated comedy.
Lucky.
Regardless of how the firm or Napoleon Dynamite fares, there'll be more of this, especially given recent news of the latest movie up for translation.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
That's right. Cable giant AMC is recreating the mob classic Goodfellas. And I only hope they learn from recent history. Because sitting through a series filled with bad Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci impressions is an offer I plan on refusing.
Eric Deggans is TV and media critic for the Tampa Bay Times. Comedy Central's Stephen Colbert is running for president of South Carolina. He's not actually on the ballot for tomorrow's primary. It's all part of Colbert's parody of the process, the same way he's parodying cable news. Recently, super PACs have fallen under his satirical scrutiny. NPR arts reporter Netta Ulaby looked into this political practical joke.
For this, I needed to go upstairs and find Peter Overby, NPR's man on campaign finance.
What is a super PAC?
Welcome to my world. It's nuts. It's the craziest situation in political money that I've seen in something like the 20 years I've been covering this.
Peter said for the first time this past year, super political action committees can raise unlimited money to run ads, often attack ads.
A group of corporate raiders led by Mitt Romney, more ruthless than Wall Street.
That ad was produced by a super PAC run partly by old friends and staff of Newt Gingrich. It twisted facts and embarrassed him. But because of rules forbidding coordination between candidates and super PACs, he couldn't make a phone call to get it off the air. He had to call a press conference.
I'm calling on the super PAC. I cannot coordinate with him. I cannot communicate directly.
It's the super PAC rules about coordinating that Stephen Colbert is mocking right now.
We're not coordinating.
That's Stephen Colbert and the guy who runs his super PAC, Jon Stewart, on the phone together with a lawyer they share. Apparently, that's legal. They hired a super lawyer, Trevor Potter, who used to work for John McCain. Now he seems to relish illuminating the absurdly broad loopholes in coordination.
Trevor, is being business partners a problem?
Being business partners does not count as coordination legally.
Great.
And when Stewart took over Colbert's super PAC so it would be totally independent, he wondered,
can I legally hire Stephen's current super PAC staff to produce these ads that will be in no way coordinated with Stephen?
Yes.
The super PAC, called Americans for a Better Tomorrow Tomorrow, ran ads also attacking Mitt Romney.
As head of Bain Capital, he bought companies, carved them up, and got rid of what he couldn't use. If Mitt Romney really believes
corporations are people, my friend,
then Mitt Romney is a serial killer.
I had nothing to do with that ad.
Stephen Colbert with George Stephanopoulos on ABC News.
I can't tell Americans for a Better Tomorrow Tomorrow what to do. It's not my super PAC, George. It's the super PAC of, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Jon Stewart.
That's aired in Charleston, South Carolina on a TV station run by Rita Little Scott.
We did not know it was Stephen Colbert for a while.
She says the ads fit right in. And she says no one has called to complain about them.
In fact, we've not received any phone calls except from the media.
Scott says she appreciates how Colbert and Stewart are exposing the flaws and absurdities in the super PAC system. That's not what another humorist was trying to do when he ran for governor of Texas a few years ago. Kinky Friedman was trying to win. He lost to Rick Perry.
My definition of politics, poly means more than one, and ticks are blood-sucking parasites.
Friedman said he really doesn't like Stephen Colbert's humor, but he says at least Colbert's taking risks. So Stephen Colbert has Kinky Friedman's endorsement for president of the United States.
Of course he does. That's why we need Stephen Colbert in there to stir things up, be a troublemaker. I very much approve of that. That's what Jesus was.
An analogy that would doubtless please candidate Stephen Colbert. Netta Ulaby, NPR News.
And speaking of dogs, this is a new ad by an agency behind last year's most memorable Super Bowl commercial. A spot for Volkswagen where a little boy dressed as Darth Vader starts his dad's new Passat using the Force.
Well, not actually, because the car has a remote start feature, but the ad was a huge success. The little boy became an overnight star, and today that ad's been viewed online almost 50 million times. It's all in part because the agency behind it, it's called Deutsch LA, did something revolutionary in the ad world. They put it on the web a week before the game.
People were even more excited about waiting to see it, you know, in the game because of that. And, of course, you know, all the online chatter and buzz it generated.
Mark Hunter is the chief creative director at Deutsch LA. He says right now, any agency worth its salt is pre-releasing their ads.
Absolutely. It's totally de rigueur now. I mean, you have to pre-release your spot. You'd be mad not to. And our thinking was, well, you know, we need to remain one step ahead of the game here. What can we do?
Well, that's where the dogs come in. You can watch this video online. It's about 15 dogs in a room, all different shapes and sizes, wearing little Star Wars outfits, barking the Imperial March. And although the dogs were shot separately and then looped and edited together, Mark Hunter swears their barks were not auto-tuned.
We simply got as many facial expressions as we could visually and had them bark as many times as they could, as many different ways. An editor wound up stitching all the sounds together. But no, that's not artificial. Those are the real dog barks, absolutely.
And what does this have to do with Volkswagen? Not a whole lot. The logo just flashes very briefly at the end. The thing is, this ad, it's actually an online teaser for another ad, one they'll also pre-release online before the Super Bowl. So it's an ad for an ad for an ad.
I mean, this really is a creative sort of arms race when it comes to the Super Bowl. We know that a lot of the competition who were just waiting and maybe even thinking that they would pre-release 4 days ahead instead of 3 days have now seen, you know, this thing out a full 2 weeks in advance.
We asked Mark Hunter if this is the wave of the future, if this is the way ad agencies will operate from now on.
I wish I could tell you we had that answer right now, but I certainly can promise you we will 12 months from now. It's a year-long Super Bowl ad next year. It will run a second a day, 365 days.
This is NPR News.